Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
My goodness. As I typically do, I've got my new stack of stuff right here. And then I'm looking at the old stacks scattered across my studio desk here. And I'm like, oh, man, we didn't mention this story yesterday. I never played the Charlemagne audio yesterday. And it's like, and then there's a lot of stuff where it's like, I could have talked about a million different things. But, hey, you know, hey, you think you got all this time in the world. And then before you know it, you're like, man, we ran out of time. We had so many great phone calls, guests, and more. Yesterday on the show, and we got another great lineup for you here today. I'm glad I just listened there to the Fox News radio update. I thought about, you know, just playing music for a few minutes, getting ready for the show, because I'll be able to listen to news and read news here all morning during some of the breaks. But I'm glad I listened, because there was two stories that I was, you know, one that I definitely wanted to talk about, the Jeff Manasso report, talking about this vote in the U.S. House of Representatives. Hey, look, two Democrats actually did the right thing to protect women and girls, not only in their sports, but in their bathrooms. You know, these pathetic Democrat lawmakers, like these senators that had their pathetic rants yesterday during the Pete Hegseth confirmation hearing, they sit here, oh, women, women, women. Oh, nobody is listening to you anymore. You wanted men in women's showers, the women that serve in our military, so you don't get to step up and rant and rave and virtue signal about protecting women. But anyway, but hey, two Democrats in the House actually did the right thing. Could you get two Democrats in the Montana House to do the right thing on the very same type of legislation? You could easily get two Republicans to do the wrong thing. It's easy to get a couple of Republicans to do the wrong thing. But getting Democrats to do the right thing, that's the hard part. That is a very, very hard part. So that's an interesting story. Congressman Ryan Zinke, I saw he had some great comments after passage of that bill to protect women and girls in sports and more. So, you know, that's a story we can talk about. The other one, I get the hurry-up offense here once again. The other story, so they had this report that, well, Marco Rubio, the Florida Senator Marco Rubio's confirmation hearing is going to be today. Now, it wasn't mentioned in that Fox News report, but there's another Fox News report. Maybe I'll play it for you after the break here. In this report, they say, well, Florida Senator Marco Rubio's hearing is expected to be less contentious than Pete Hegseth's. And my just knee-jerk reaction was, of course it is. Of course it is. Because he is a senator. He is one of them. And senators always give favors and go easier on other senators because they're part of the club. And these Democrat senators, one day they're going to want to be somebody. They're going to want to be appointed to something. And they're going to want Republican senators to vote for them someday. So they always go easy on their fellow senators. It's why you could have been a Republican, or you could have been a Democrat appointed senator to be the Defense Department secretary back in the 90s with no military experience. And of course, they still voted for you because you were a senator.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With partly to mostly sunny skies across the area for today, high temperatures will range around 40 degrees. Moving into today with a clear sky, low temperature readings back into the lower 20s in Bozeman, upper 20s in Billings. And then Thursday, still staying mainly sunny and mild with a high temperature at around 43 degrees. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Securing America.
Those responsible for securing the presidential inauguration say they are ready for the event. Secret Service Special Agent in Charge, Matt McCool.
Secret Service will bring agents and other specialists from field offices across the country to provide a full slate of visible and invisible security measures.
The inauguration will be the third national special security event in D.C. in the last 2 weeks, following the Electoral College count and the Carter funeral events. U.S. Capitol Police Chief Thomas Manger says
the biggest threat, I think, for all of us remains the lone actor.
But David Sundberg of the FBI says the good news is
we are not currently tracking any specific or credible threats.
D.C. Police Chief Pamela Smith adding,
there are no law enforcement agencies that are more unified than those trusted with securing the presidential inauguration.
President-elect Trump gets sworn in at noon next Monday. Kevin Uretsky, Fox News.
Hey, I know we've got a lot of Montana Talks listeners that are joining us from the Capitol. Maybe you're a state legislator. Maybe you're a citizen who's there to lobby for good legislation. Maybe you just live in Helena and you want to come join us for Friday's Montana Talks. Either way, want you to come by, say hi, join us on the microphone if you want to as well. We are going to be live from the Montana Capitol this Friday, previewing Monday's Co-op Day at the Capitol event, Monday, January 20th. Details at MontanaTalks.com.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
One of the two stories that I wanted to get to yesterday. I even mentioned that Charlemagne clip, and then I never got to it. Let me make sure I pull that one up here before I forget. Okay, all right. But first, though, I told you we would start with this one. So, yeah, here is another Fox News Radio report talking about the cabinet hearings. The latest news, I think this is the one that I heard earlier this morning, kind of the latest rundown of President Trump's cabinet nominees and hearing schedules, hearing reactions, hearing this, hearing that. Here you go.
President-elect Donald Trump's foreign policy team will continue their confirmation hearings with Florida Senator Marco Rubio expected to receive a warm welcome in his confirmation hearing for Secretary of State. The Foreign Relations Committee has already scheduled a markup of Rubio's nomination for Inauguration Day, essentially penciling him in, signaling a swift vote and swearing in that night. The Senate Intelligence Committee will question Trump's nominee to lead CIA, John Ratcliffe, who previously directed the entire nation's spy apparatus as Director of National Intelligence. As a former House member, he was a staunch Trump defender in Congress. Plus, Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi will sit for one of a two-day confirmation hearing.
But again, this is the point here, is that, like, oh, of course, Florida Senator Marco Rubio is going to have a smoother confirmation hearing. The Democrats are still going to, you know, pull their BS antics and their same old tricks. But you will not see the fire and the hostility and the anger that they directed at a warrior like Pete Hegseth. See, because he's not a part of their little club in the United States Senate. That's why, you know, some of the audio that we're going to play for you here this morning is somebody who just became a part of their club, who wasn't a part of their club. And that's Montana Senator Tim Sheehy, the Navy SEAL veteran, the aerial firefighter from back here in Montana. And his comments were so good. He got a lot of traction. A lot of his back and forth with Pete Hegseth yesterday went viral on X and other social media platforms. A lot of big influencers were saying, oh, man, check this out. Quote of the day right here. Quote of the day right there. He was on Sean Hannity's show last night. They quoted him on Fox and Friends earlier this morning. And some of you may have thought, you know, oh, well, why is he going? Why is he asking him these very detailed questions like, hey, can you tell us what caliber is in the M4? And Pete Hegseth says, like, well, it's a 5.56. Hey, can you tell us what type of ammunition is used with the M9? Well, that's a 9mm. Okay, all right. And some people, how many push-ups did you do today? Well, I did 5 rounds of 47. Good number, right? 47. And some of you might have been thinking, like, oh, who cares how many push-ups he did? That wasn't Tim Sheehy's point. His point isn't, hey, you can't be Secretary of Defense if you can't do enough push-ups. His point was, and he explained this on Sean Hannity's show last night, he was trying to point out how so many of these folks in Washington And unfortunately, at the Pentagon and inside the United States Senate, they're in these exclusive rooms. They hang out with all their exclusive buddies. And they don't understand nor seem to care about the men and women on the ground, the war fighters that are actually in the fight. And yet these are the people that make the decisions that could cost them their lives or their limbs. And because Pete Hegseth is not a part of their little club and their little circle, and because he is challenging their little club and this little circle and this little establishment that has been such a failure for our military and such a failure for our national security and our foreign policy, they have to throw every sort of BS allegation against him. And there they were. And that's why you could have been, and actually somebody we're going to talk to, and I just got a note. I see he's on the phone lines right now. A great guy I served in Afghanistan with. Tim, if you want to stick around or call back in another 10 minutes, I can get you on this hour. I think we had a time scheduling change or misunderstanding. Yeah, we can either get you on in a couple hours in our 8 o'clock hour Montana time, which would be, you know, the 10 o'clock hour Eastern time for you, or if you want to stick around, I'm short on time right now, but we can get to you here in about 7 minutes or so, I think, after our farm and ranch report. But yeah, because I'm looking forward to hearing from him, because this is what I want to talk with him about. This guy is very knowledgeable, very well read. And a long time ago, when Pete Hegseth was first mentioned as President Trump's, you know, Secretary of Defense nominee, we were chatting offline, and it's like, you've got secretaries of defense that never even served in the military. And one of them, a guy named, I can't remember if he served or not. I don't believe he served. Tim will be able to tell us. One of them is Bill Cohen. Bill Cohen was a senator, I think, from Maine. And Bill Clinton made him Secretary of Defense. And he was a nice guy. When I was a waiter, I went to college in Washington, D.C. at Howard University. And when I was a waiter, Bill Cohen and his wife, they actually had a fancy apartment in the upper floors of the very building where the restaurant I worked at was at. And it was right on the edge of the Navy Memorial in Washington, D.C., 7th and Pennsylvania, right there is where, you know, I would go wait tables and pay for college and everything else, right? And so I got to meet a lot of, you know, really interesting people. I waited on, you know, SecDef Bill Cohen, and this was before I'd even been in the military, and his wife, really nice people. But, of course, you know, senators had no problem at all making a fellow senator the Secretary of Defense. But a warrior and a warfighter like Pete Hegseth, oh no, they have to pull out all the stops, these Democrat senators, to stop that from happening. Anyway, lots to talk about. We've got full audio, of course, as well.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
The electricity business is a fascinating one, at least I think so. Not many agree with me. Decades ago, when I worked for an electric utility, I had a surefire way to make the kids fall asleep, and that was to talk about electricity. Growing up in an era of cheap, reliable, ubiquitous electric power put us all to sleep on the nuts and bolts challenges of making it all work. Those days are gone. Electricity has become a high wire act, with threats coming from all directions. The latest comes from the EPA, making its second attempt to close down coal-fired power generation through regulatory fiat, this time requiring generators to spend billions to sequester carbon in ways not yet technically proven to continue to produce. At a time when China and others are building new plants every few weeks, this sure looks like all cost and no gain. The economic and engineering challenges of maintaining what we're used to, reliably, reasonably priced electricity, in the face of the need to reduce carbon emissions is daunting enough. I'm Patrick Burton.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
I'm Chad Pergrum with the Speaker's Lobby. Okay, time to dip into the congressional glossary. A term you'll hear a lot over the next few months is budget reconciliation. That's the parliamentary means which the House and Senate intends to use to pass major components of President-elect Trump's legislative agenda. Budget reconciliation is part of the budget process, and it requires that both the House and Senate adopt a budget first to have the reconciliation process at their disposal to use later. Note that approving a budget is often one of the most onerous tasks facing lawmakers, so it's far from certain that lawmakers can do that. that. But the key to reconciliation is that it can skip over a filibuster in the Senate. Normal procedures require 60 yeas to overcome a filibuster. Under reconciliation, just a simple majority. But here's the catch with reconciliation. The issues lawmakers consider under this process must be fiscal in nature and not add to the deficit over 10 years. In other words, taxation and deficit reduction works under budget reconciliation. Border and immigration policy, well, that's questionable. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's time for your Daybreak Ag Report. I'm Russell Nemitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Ag Network. And this morning, I'm in Scottsdale at the American Sheep Industry Association's annual convention. And our coverage this week here in Arizona is sponsored by the American Lamb Board. For more information on lamb checkoff funded projects, visit lambboard.com. Well, ASI President and Wyoming rancher Brad Boner says, like other industry organizations, passing a new farm bill this year is critically important.
In the 11th hour, when they were doing the continuing resolution at the end of the year, the orphan programs and the farm bill didn't make it into the bill. And that includes the wool trust, or the wool apparel and manufacturers trust fund. So we got work to do there to get that back into the farm bill. And that's the funding source for the wool trust fund and the wool council. And so that's probably job one. We still got work to do on the lamb market. We got work to do on the wool market.
And he says, like others, ASI is concerned about President-elect Trump's threat of tariffs on imports and possible retaliation. However, they're looking forward to working with the new administration on rolling back burdensome regulations that have impacted farmers and ranchers.
The incoming administration, Trump administration, seems to mention a tariff every other day, it seems like, on one thing or another. How much that's a negotiating tool, how much of it's real, I don't think any of us know the answer to that at the moment. But obviously a more small business friendly administration coming into this, and more ag friendly, we hope, than the last one. And so look forward to working with them and trying to, you know, pull back some of the federal overreach that we experienced during the last administration, which especially in the last 2 years was incredible how much they tried to change our world.
Again, that was ASI President and Wyoming rancher Brad Boner. This year's ASI convention runs today through Saturday here in Scottsdale, Arizona. For more information, you can always visit sheepusa.org. Stay with us. We'll have more ag news right after this.
The American Lamb Board wants 2025 to be the best year yet for education. Lamb Checkoff funded programs include workshops and summits aimed at equipping sheep producers with the necessary tools and resources to profitably grow their operations. Like the American Lamb Summit, July 22nd through 25th, University of Idaho in Moscow. Event highlights include defining lamb quality and hitting carcass targets, and increasing production efficiency. Learn more and register at lambboard.com.
Ranchers, it's time for the Current Creek Angus Sale. Monday, January 20th, 50 bulls, 25 bred heifers, and 25 heifer calves sell at the fairgrounds in Roundup, Montana. These are some of the very best Angus genetics the industry has to offer, with herd sires like WCF Payway, VAR Shearcold, CAR Yeti, and Woodhill Blueprint. Lunch at noon, sale time 1 o'clock. Catalog, videos, online bidding at frontierlivesale.com. Current Creek Angus, raising cattle bred to work in the real world. Well, the CME Group has announced plans to launch physically delivered hard red spring wheat futures and options in early quarter two of 2025, pending regulatory approvals. And they say the new product will compete directly with the historic Minneapolis market. Now, those in the know say that more trading of spring wheat would likely be supportive of the industry with added liquidity in the marketplace. CME's expansion plan comes on the heels of record volume traded through the exchange last year. For the Western Ag Network, I'm Russell Nemitz.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. This is where Montana talks.
All right, he's on Eastern Time. We're on Mountain Time, or Montana Time, as I like to call it. But hey, he's on the phone lines already. Let's jump right into it. Nice extra feature here for our folks here in the early morning hours of Montana Talks. Tim Tyler, Great guy. Served with him in Afghanistan. I was out to, at Kopp Wilderness in the mountains. He was at Fob Lightning, and we would go there oftentimes to get supplies and talk to higher headquarters and more, and just would get to have some great conversations with him. He had served in the military and then was served several years in Afghanistan working as an intelligence advisor to the Afghan army and more. But Tim, hey, great to have you back on Montana Talks. Thanks for calling in this morning.
Hey, thank you, Aaron. It's great to be here.
Well, man, I wish I had your full bio in front of me, but like Pete Hegseth, you got a degree for, I think, was it a master's degree, or are you Dr. Tim yet here? So you've served in the military. You went to Harvard. You worked with Pete Hegseth when he, you know, founded and was the head of Concerned Veterans for America. So anyway, it's great to have you on the show. What'd you think of the Hegseth confirmation hearing yesterday?
Well, you know, Aaron, I was very disappointed in the action of a lot of the Democratic senators who are grilling Pete. Everyone seems to be overlooking the fact that Pete served voluntarily in Iraq for a year, served in Afghanistan for a year, is a recipient of 2 Bronze Stars, is a recipient of the Combat Infantryman's Badge, which, you know, as you know, is a very rarely awarded badge. Only infantrymen can get it. And, you know, I was just really disappointed that to them, that was not the most important thing about him, that he's a decorated combat veteran.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you and I have talked about this before. When Pete Hegseth was first, you know, named as President Trump's nominee, they were like, oh, well, what qualifications does he have? And, well, you know, they put out this idea like, unless you were some 4-star general who's been a part of the defense and Washington establishment for your entire career, you're not qualified. And it's like, actually, there's been SecDefs that never even served in the military.
That is 100% correct. William Cohen, who was one of President Bill Clinton's Secretary of Defenses, had never served one day in the military. And I can remember when he was being nominated and approved, no one was throwing that up in his face, that he had no military service.
Yeah, because, of course, he was a senator, and the senators love to give favors to their fellow senators because they expect the favor to be returned if they ever get nominated to something. Tim Tyler, hold that thought. Got to get the Fox News update in here. We'll get. I'd imagine we may get some more highlights from the confirmation hearing here in the Fox News update, and then we'll be back out in 60 seconds, so stand by. My friend and fellow veteran Tim Tyler joining us from the great state of Georgia here this morning. Georgia, Tim, yeah, talk more about these, you know, prior secretaries of defense and who supposedly had all these qualifications. Dick Cheney, who's a congressman from Wyoming. You had Les Aspin. Maybe he had like a tiny bit of military experience.
Well, so Les Aspin had basically been a systems analyst in the Pentagon. So, yes, he was, I believe, a second lieutenant in the Pentagon, maybe picked up his first lieutenancy while he was still in the Pentagon, but basically sat at a desk stateside, never heard any bullets fired in anger. You know, I think it speaks very highly of Pete Hegseth that after serving in Iraq, he was then willing to volunteer to serve in Afghanistan. I mean, Aaron, to be honest, you and Pete are the only 2 infantry platoon leaders I know who volunteered to serve in both wars.
And I know there's many others out there, but yeah, in terms of folks that you know personally, yeah, you know, it's funny you talk about, you know, Pete. That's what I love about this Pete Hegseth nomination is that finally one of the you know, people who served, and look, these generals, look, did they technically serve in Iraq and Afghanistan as well? Yes, yes. And I don't want to, you know, downplay any of their service and sacrifice. But at the end of the day, especially the Iraq fight in the early years, in the mid-2000s, the early 2000s,
It was a company and below fight, meaning this was captains, lieutenants, privates, specialists, and sergeants that were in that fight. And, you know, these generals were, you know, oftentimes just second-guessing the warfighters on the ground.
Yes, that's very true. And, you know, as you know, you and I were down in Paxia Province. We were getting shelled every night in the summertime when I was at FOB Lightning. You know, the bases in Kabul were rarely, if ever, being attacked. So if you were a, you know, four-star general up at ISAF headquarters in Kabul, yeah, I mean, you were there, but it was a very different war than being down the front lines in Paxia Province.
Yeah. So, I'm, you know, it's funny, too. Like, here's Pete Hegseth, who on a daily basis interacts with foreign policy, national security experts. I mean, but if he was running some liberal think tank like the Brookings Institution in D.C. doing the same thing, but it wasn't for Fox News, they'd be like, oh, this is so great. And the Democrats would be propping him up.
Oh, 100%. And I've got to say something, too, Aaron. I was a mid-level manager with Concerned Veterans for America for several years. I did work very closely with Pete. You know, the media smears against him are not the Pete Hegseth that I knew. You know, I never saw Pete drunk. I never saw him doing anything appropriate towards women.
Well
he was
said.
Unfailingly polite.
Hold that thought. I got to take a quick break here. We'll come back to you right after this, Tim.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, a couple more minutes here with my friend Tim Tyler, and then I'll play some highlights from the Pete Hegseth confirmation hearing yesterday. There was a great back and forth between Navy SEAL veteran and Montana's new senator, Tim Sheehy, who sits on the Armed Services Committee. He's also on the Veterans Affairs Committee as well. And it was great back and forth between he and Pete Hegseth. And I loved that back and forth because it was, man, it was just so heartfelt. And it was the real deal. It was warrior to warrior conversation. So anyway, we'll play some of that. And then I've got audio of Senator Sheehy on with Sean Hannity last night as well. Tim Tyler, yeah, you worked at Concerned Veterans for America with Pete Hegseth. You also served in the military. You like Pete Hegseth, have a degree from, you know, Harvard of all places, on top of your other degrees. And I understand you're also working as a professor right now as well. But yeah, talk more about you personally working with Pete Hegseth and the fact that the Democrats and the left-wing media, they're just throwing anything at the wall and hoping it sticks with all of these just absurd allegations.
Oh, that's totally true there, Aaron. You know, I worked with Pete for several years. I was a mid-level manager with Concerned Veterans for America. I was their Georgia State Director. I never saw Pete drunk during that whole time. I never saw him acting inappropriately towards anyone. He was always very polite to me. He was polite to other people. He was hardworking. He was a team builder. You know, I'm really disappointed in all the smear tactics they've used. Pete visited Georgia several times. He never touched alcohol any of the times he was here in Georgia. I feel like the Democrats are really trying to cherry pick, you know, certain events and paint him as someone that he really is not.
Of course, yeah, and even if he did have a beverage while he was in Georgia, who freaking cares? But that just goes to show that, like, man, if he didn't even have a beverage in Georgia, and these people are claiming he was, you know, just getting drunk on the job, I mean, give me a break. Even even all of his colleagues at Fox News are like, we worked with Pete every single day at 0:30 in the morning. This is absurd. Tim, did you have a high? I'm going to get to some of the highlights from the hearing here in a second. Did you have a favorite highlight or something that stood out to you from the hearing?
Well, you know, I thought it was a little on the childish side when Senator Tammy Duckworth was condemning him for not knowing all the nations in the Association of Southeastern Asian States. You know, ASEAN, as it's called, this is not a military alliance. I mean, there's really no reason that Pete, as Secretary of Defense, should have to know the nations there. He correctly mentioned that Australia is a key U.S. ally. I thought that was the appropriate, you know, answer there. That's the country that we interact the most with in Southeast Asia. We fought alongside them in the Vietnam War, in Korea, World War II, Desert Storm, Afghanistan. But, you know, I just felt like Tammy Duckworth was trying to pull something out of her file cabinet, some obscure information that really wasn't relevant to his job as Secretary of Defense.
And Johnny Joey Jones, another Georgian who, you know, lost both of his legs in Afghanistan, he went after her on X as well for some of her other virtue signaling and trying to pat herself on the back. So that was great to see. Well, Tim Tyler, great to hear from you. Great to get your insight. I'm sure people can go on Amazon or to their favorite bookstore, search your name, Tim Tyler. You've written a book about Iran. You've written a book about Panama, if I remember right, as well. And your book about Iran is incredible history. So thanks so much for joining us. And I would encourage folks to look for your books for sure.
Thank you, Aaron.
All right. Great to catch up with you. Okay, let's see. I think I've got time to play most of this, if not all of it. Here you go. This is Montana Senator and Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy, his back and forth with Pete Hegseth yesterday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Entering a support letter in for Mr. Hegseth, submitted by nearly 90 former soldiers who served with Pete in combat. I would like to submit a statement from 86 of them who support his nomination. Although they come from different units and ranks, the signatories commend Mr. Hegseth for his selfless leadership, love of his soldiers, and commitment to our country.
Two items.
Sorry, one item. I ask unanimous consent to enter this.
Without objection, it will be entered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pete, I'm actually going to ask you questions because I want to hear your answer. How many genders are there? Tough one.
Senator, there are two genders.
I know that well. I'm a Sheehy, so I'm on board. What is the diameter of the rifle round fired out of an M4 A1 rifle?
That's a 5.56.
How many push-ups can you do?
I did 5 sets of 47 this morning.
What do you think our most important strategic base is in the Pacific?
In the Pacific? Guam is pretty strategically significant.
How many rounds of 5.56 can you fit into the magazine of an M4 rifle?
Depends on the magazine, but standard issue is 30, Senator.
And what size round does the M9 Beretta standard issue sidearm for the military fire?
A 9mm, Senator.
What kind of batteries do you put in your night vision goggle?
Duracell.
So right there, you're representing qualifications that show you understand what the warfighter deals with every single day on the battlefield. You understand what happens on the front line, where our troops will be. And what happens, unfortunately, in this country is decisions made in rooms like this, bad decisions, end up in dead 17, 18, 19-year-old Americans. And those Americans rarely come from families that sit in rooms like this. They come from lower, middle-income families. Who sometimes the military is their only way out. And they join because maybe they want to go to college. Maybe they know the choice. Maybe they love this country. But for whatever reason, they joined and they sat on the dotted line. And when people like us screw up, they don't come home. And that's the one thing that I care about. As you remember when I shut the door when you came with your entourage, Senator Coleman, I've known for a long time. And you and I sat together and asked you one question. You remember what that question was?
Are you going to have the backs of the warfighters?
Exactly. What is going to be your number one priority? And I don't care, frankly, what all these letters and articles say. I've been a part of a smear campaign, too. I get it. I care that you're going to have one thing in mind when you sit in that chair in that five-sided building. And you told me what that was. So with that, you have my support. I'm sorry you have to go through a process like this, but it is one of the most important jobs in the world. We got to make sure you're ready for it. I thank you for your answers. I got one final question that's very important to me. This is more of a technical question, but I think it's to fix the Army in this country is a 1 or 2 year problem. We can make bullets, we can make rifles. Fix the Air Force might be a 5 year problem. Fix our Navy is a decades-long pursuit. How are you going to fix our national... You don't have all the power. We're not China. Unfortunately, you can't snap your fingers. But how are you going to lead an initiative within the DOD to reinvigorate our national shipbuilding industry so we are able to compete with China? Because freedom of navigation is critical to our economy and the global economy. It's going to be a very important task for you to complete.
It's a critical question, Senator, and that's why I'm grateful that President Trump has said definitively to me and publicly that shipbuilding will be one of his absolute top priorities of this administration. So a lot of it does go into pulling things up into the OSD's office, Secretary of Defense's office, to shine a spotlight on it, to make sure the bureaucracy doesn't strangle important initiatives that need to happen. We need to reinvigorate our defense industrial base in this country to include our shipbuilding capacity. Some of it is on the east, some of it's on the west, some of it's on the Great Lakes. The workforce problems that our shipyards are facing are significant, and there's been a big investment from this committee, I know, in a lot of those places because of the shortfalls, manpower issues, everything else. But we also see adversaries that have been able to innovate themselves in ways that their shipbuilding capacity is, I won't reveal it at this hearing, multitudes and multitudes beyond our capabilities. So it needs to be a rapid investment, a rapid fielding, and then we need to incentivize outside entities to fill the gap. We talk a lot about UAVs. UAVs are very important, but there's also a future of UUVs, unmanned underwater vehicles, that will be a part of amplifying the impact of our Navy. Because this administration has allowed our number of ships to drop below 300. It sets a projection of 340 or 350, but doesn't create the capacity to actually address it. And so if we're going to defend our interests, our allies, and put America first, we're going to have to be able to project power. That means shipbuilding. It means historic investments in our defense industrial base there. And then also driving innovation and cost savings in ways that only business leaders inside the Pentagon can do.
Well, I'd add, I don't think any board in the world would have hired Steve Jobs or Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg when they founded their companies either. So this country was founded by young people who had a great vision. Thank you for being willing to serve your country again. And thanks for coming here today. I yield back, Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Sheehy. You yield back the balance of your time.
Yeah, I love the fact that he didn't know all the parliamentary procedure crap there at the end. All right, stand by.
Your morning cup of Sean. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
Look, the pettiness was on display. It's going to be on display for Cash. It's going to be on display for Tulsi. It's going to be on display for Pam, who's on. I think she's up tomorrow. It's going to be on display for Marco. It's going to be on display for RFK Jr. It's pretty much going to be everybody. And this is just Democrats, bitter, angry, petty. We saw all the pettiness of Joe Biden on the way out the door. None of this should be a surprise to anybody. We saw it on display today. I mean, the fact that they designate Tim Kaine, Hillary Clinton's running mate, to go after Pete on issues from his past is a little ironic. Did that not make you laugh? It kind of made me laugh.
The conservative underground meets later today on the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, ready for a home upgrade without the hassle? You want to give your home a fresh look in 2025 with new custom window treatments? Check in with our friends at Blinds.com, where real professional design experts make the complex very simple for you. If you have a complicated project, no worries, no problem. Blinds.com, they make it simple. Their designers can schedule a complimentary professional measure for you. You can shop from the comfort of your home. They'll even send samples to your door fast and free. You can choose from stylish Roman and woven wood shades. They have their shutters, their motorized options, which I love, and much more. And with Blinds.com, you don't wait around for an in-home consultation just to get a quote. Blinds.com has covered more than 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45% off on select styles, plus a complimentary professional measure, up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Check it out today. Okay.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
But
this is the Montana Economic Minute.
The electricity business is a fascinating one, at least I think so. Not many agree with me. Decades ago, when I worked for an electric utility, I had a surefire way to make the kids fall asleep, and that was to talk about electricity. Growing up in an era of cheap, reliable, ubiquitous electric power put us all to sleep on the nuts and bolts challenges of making it all work. Those days are gone. Electricity has become a high wire act, with threats coming from all directions. The latest comes from the EPA, making its second attempt to close down coal-fired power generation through regulatory fiat, this time requiring generators to spend billions to sequester carbon in ways not yet technically proven to continue to produce. At a time when China and others are building new plants every few weeks, this sure looks like all cost and no gain. The economic and engineering challenges of maintaining what we're used to, reliably, reasonably priced electricity, in the face of the need to reduce carbon emissions is daunting enough. I'm Patrick Burton.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Hey, I know we've got a lot of Montana Talks listeners that are joining us from the Capitol. Maybe you're a state legislator. Maybe you're a citizen who's there to lobby for good legislation. Maybe you just live in Helena and you want to come join us for Friday's Montana Talks. Either way, want you to come by, say hi, join us on the microphone if you want to as well. We are going to be live from the Montana Capitol this Friday, previewing Monday's Co-op Day at the Capitol event, Monday, January 20th. Details at MontanaTalks.com.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we've got a ton of other great highlights from the headset confirmation hearing yesterday and other big news to talk about. We'll get to that coming up in the 7 o'clock hour of the show. Here we go. Every day at this time, the legislative update from Jeff Laslaffy and the Montana Family Foundation.
In a welcome turn of events, Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson has asked the United States Supreme Court to overturn the Montana Supreme Court's egregious decision in the case of Planned Parenthood v. State. You may recall that the Montana Supreme Court in December overruled the will of 73% of Montana voters and upheld a district court decision that overturned a 2013 law requiring abortion providers to obtain parental consent before performing an abortion on a minor. The law was known as the Consent Act. The decision itself was bad enough, placing government squarely between parents and their kids. But it goes further than that. Much further. It actually says that children in Montana have procreative autonomy. That means the complete unfettered ability to make reproductive decisions for themselves regardless of their age. Pedophiles across the state must be cheering this decision. Under this decision, a minor girl of any age can conceivably consent to sex with a male of any age. The Montana Supreme Court has lost its collective mind, which is why the Montana legislature has 27 bills focused on judicial reform. It's the Attorney General's assertion that the state Supreme Court cannot simply nullify parents' rights. In her opinion, Justice Lori McKinnon said, quote, "Not all families are healthy, and the Consent Act empowers parents who do not make decisions in their child's best interest to control an important fundamental right of their child," end quote. This leaves one to ask, did she even read the Consent Act? It contains a judicial bypass mechanism that allows a girl to obtain consent for an abortion from a judge if her family situation is unhealthy or unsafe. This motion is just the latest in a 13-year saga that began when voters approved a ballot referendum in 2012 that required parental notification for a minor to get an abortion. After passage, the legislature received word that Planned Parenthood was coaching minors to send the notification letters to fictitious addresses. The legislature in 2013 then changed the notification provision to a consent provision, and Planned Parenthood was forced to sue. The case then spent the next 10 years winding its way through district courts in Helena and Missoula, as liberal judges did their best to duck and delay. One judge in Missoula sat on the case for 3 years, then finally retired. This case is one of the best examples of judicial abuse of power ever witnessed in Montana. Finally, we were forced to rally on the steps of the Montana Supreme Court and demand that the court quit stalling. Only then did the case miraculously reappear in a Helena district court, but it was still a year and a half before final resolution. This is just one of multiple examples of abuse by Montana's courts, and it's one of the best reasons that the legislative and executive branches are finally pushing back. Governor Gianforte, in his State of the State address, asked the legislature to send him a bill that restores a party affiliation to judicial races. For years, judicial candidates in Montana declared a party affiliation, and in the opinion of a majority of Montanans, it's time to bring that back. In his speech, the governor said that in reality, Montana's Supreme Court races are, quote, nonpartisan in name only, end quote. He went on to say, quote, Montanans have a right to know the values and principles of the judges they elect. Let's bring light to this darkness, end quote. With regard to Attorney General Knutson's appeal, it will take four U.S. Supreme Court justices to agree to hear the case. Let's pray that they make the right decision. For the Montana Family Foundation, this is Jeff Laszloffy reminding you that this government is your government and your input does make a difference.
Contact the Montana Family Foundation at 406-628-1141 or on the web at montanafamily.org.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
The electricity business is a fascinating one, at least I think so. Not many agree with me. Decades ago, when I worked for an electric utility, I had a surefire way to make the kids fall asleep, and that was to talk about electricity. Growing up in an era of cheap, reliable, ubiquitous electric power put us all to sleep on the nuts and bolts challenges of making it all work. Those days are gone. Electricity has become a high wire act, with threats coming from all directions. The latest comes from the EPA, making its second attempt to close down coal-fired power generation through regulatory fiat, this time requiring generators to spend billions to sequester carbon in ways not yet technically proven to continue to produce. At a time when China and others are building new plants every few weeks, this sure looks like all cost and no gain. The economic and engineering challenges of maintaining what we're used to, reliably, reasonably priced electricity, in the face of the need to reduce carbon emissions is daunting enough. I'm Patrick Barton.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.